When you're pregnant, you do your best to keep away from harmful substances. But what about what's in your prenatal multivitamin? This is where Ritual comes in. Our pregnancy support is made traceable and Clean Label Project certified for the many stages of pregnancy, including trying to get there. This is the safe, science-backed support you deserve. Get 25% off at ritual.com/pregnancy support. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, friends, and welcome to Monday. It's not Monday. It's Tuesday. Thrown out by a bank holiday. Welcome to Tuesday mornings edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. I am Mark Heath. I'm joined by my two best friends, Rossi and Stu. And friends, of course, having now got the day right, it's time for a bit of good news, bad news, isn't it? Bad news, Ipswich Town got absolutely schooled by Arsenal on Sunday. They're basically relegated. They get relegated on Saturday. Good news, I have now completed a year of my Duolingo streak. So I'm basically Italian now. And even better news, Watson's got a new palace in which he's appearing from for the first time. Stu, we have to start here. How is the new Watson Towers with your sculpted guns? So you've got a gym, you've got 14 acres of land, you've got a fish pond, you've got a swimming pool, you've got a jacuzzi, 17 bedrooms, you're just telling me. This is one of them in the West Wing. How is it, mate?
All of that and more, absolutely. Yeah. on my journalist's wage. You're all thinking about the bad news still, aren't you, listeners?
Bad news is gone.
Yeah, I think we've all been at peace with the relegation part of that chat, haven't we? For a little while. I'm very well, thank you. Settling in nicely. Was worth the stress of all the admin and the middle of the chain. And people say it's one of the most stressful things you can do, moving house. Yeah, it wasn't all smooth sailing, but we got there and we're settling in. It feels like home.
I'm going to come back to you in a minute because I've got two very big important questions I want to ask you, but we'll get Ross involved first of all. Ross, you've just been tussling with a water bottle this morning, which you were trying to open just before I press record. What's the latest on that?
Still not open.
Still remains.
This is the biggest, hardest... What's the score again?
That's the top.
Cap. Honestly, I've been here for ages and I've literally virtually given this to Stu to open, but obviously that doesn't work like that. No. And I may have to go downstairs to ask my missus to open it because honestly, it's so... I can't get out. So, I'll get there. By the end of the pod, it's going to be opened.
Stay tuned for that. Breaking news as Ross just spills it all over his laptop and it just explodes live on KOA. Stu, I'm coming back to you now on your house because this is the most exciting thing that I've had to talk about for quite some time. It says quite a lot about my life. Two big questions, Watson. One, where's Bluey? Because you're now in a state of the art, bespoke, perfect new house. So I imagine everything is pristine. Bluey, as we know, was your little your bunny friend who lived under the stairs in your old place. House rabbit. Is Bluey still being trusted inside?
Yeah, bespoke's probably pushing it. It's not a house that's been made to order. I haven't built this from scratch. Yeah. Just a house that I've bought. Yeah. Bluey, yeah, he's a happy bunny. Yeah, he's got plenty more space to run around. He's got absolute free roam of the house. Strangely, we're now, because we've got a bit more of an enclosed garden now. We've opened up the patio doors and said, "Go on, out you go. You can have free roam of the garden." And he doesn't want to at the moment.
He doesn't fancy it.
No, I think he's still sort of, yeah, still working that little bit out. So he's happy out there in a run, but he doesn't want sort of complete free roam of the garden. Maybe he's put off by the birds and things like that. So, but yeah, he's good.
Excellent.
He's fine.
That's good. I'm pleased to hear that he's still allowed inside. And second question, how many toilets have you got now, Stu?
How many toilets have I got?
Yeah,
I have three toilets.
Yes, three toilets. Join the three toilets club. Have you gone like I did? I went from one to three. I mean, that was a big step up.
It's exactly what I've done, and I feel like an absolute king at the moment.
Have you selected your favourite?
I don't know if I've christened them all. If I'm completely honest with you,
so excited.
But so yeah, that's something to look forward to, isn't it?
You need to have a favourite.
I do have a favourite. Yeah.
Where is it?
The ensuite.
Oh, nice. Excellent. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's that big step up, feel like a proper big baller, don't you? One toilet to three toilets. That's what we're talking about. And sadly, I suppose we have to talk about football at some point on today's show as well. Rossi, any? I can see you in the background there. You're trying to... No?
Honestly, I think they've actually not, like, loosened it. I think it is, like...
You've got like a cryogenically sealed.
Yeah, bottle. I'm using a pen right now to like try to get it up because normally it is like a bit loose, but bloody hell. Stay tuned.
Just like to remind people we actually get paid for this. right then, friends, should we start talking about Arsenal? It was a bit dispiriting, wasn't it, Stu? If I'm honest, I mean, we all talked it up on last week's show. We got a bit giddy. Alex had plotted a way of Town actually surviving, which included beating Arsenal. We all thought, Arsenal won't care about this. Obviously, they've just beaten Real Madrid. They're probably not bothered about what happened at Portman Road on Sunday. Mm. Sadly, they did. Put it to you, Stu, this was levels. It was like, it was a humbling. It was men against boys, whatever else you want to say about it. Arsenal were just way too good for Ipswich.
Yeah, obviously, going down to 10 men sort of changed the final hour of the game, but up until that point, 11v11. It's really distracting, Ross. You wrestling with that bottle in the background. As you say, men v boys in that first half an hour. Arsenal sort of carved through Ipswich a couple of times early on before they even got the breakthrough. The first goal was kind of the season in a nutshell, really. Ipswich have a sort of a half chance, a bit of an opening at one end, and Ciso picks the wrong option. The one player that doesn't need much
invitation
to shoot normally from outside the box decided to play a sort of try and play a cute pass to Hurst. It's intercepted, and then seconds later, Arsenal go and score, which has kind of been the tale of Ipswich's season. Not clinical enough at one end. Well, not tight enough at the other. 1-0 down. The second Arsenal goal is just class, isn't it? That's just elite football.
Yeah.
The little flick from Marino in the box to set it up. And, it was game over even before 10 men, really. So, that's, as you say, levels. This is a team that's just humbled Real Madrid 5-1 on aggregate over two legs. And they went strong as well with their lineup. So... no shaming losing to Arsenal, given the circumstances, given the players that were at Ipswich's disposal as well, which I think is worth highlighting. But it's not games like this, which is the reason Ipswich are not going to stay up. It's when the season's done and dusted, it's other matches that we'll be looking back on as sliding doors moments, not one like this.
Right, Ross, I'm going to play this McKenna clip. So if you're going to tackle your bottle again, feel free. You've got a minute 38. To get it open. Let's see if you manage it. Well, we hear from Kieran McKenna.
Kieran, another difficult day in the Premier League against obviously top quality opposition. What's your verdict on that one, please?
Yeah, really tough game. Probably two different games to a certain extent. Tough with 11v11. Arsenal started really well. Probably felt at the start of the game that it was, you know, maybe the highest standard that we faced this year, to be honest. So the group was absolutely at full stretch trying to compete in the first 20-30 minutes. We had a few moments where we could have hurt the opposition, but in the end their execution was better than ours and their quality shone through in the goals. And they were the better team and deserved the lead at that point. Of course then the red card makes it, you know, almost an impossible task in terms of getting back into the game. And I thought the group showed good qualities with 10 men, to be honest. The second half's a really tough situation. I thought we managed it well. Defensive, you know, organisation, spirit, resilience was really good. Didn't give up too many things in free play. We knew if we'd done that we'd actually get one or two moments up around their box. We had a similar situation in the Aston Villa game early in the season and we actually had a couple of little moments. You need it to go in the net, really, to have a chance in the game. But it didn't. And then, just disappointed with a couple of short corners, which were difficult to deal with. The good on short corners, when you lose that man, that's actually one moment where it becomes really difficult because... You know, without giving up too much in the box, it's hard to match up the numbers that they have in the short, even with 11v11. So, disappointed that a couple of short corners end up going in the net. But I thought the second half, the group showed the right qualities that, you know, were needed to show in that instance.
Ross, what have you done? I've just seen your face change as we were watching that.
I broke my pen. So,
You're using your pen to try and sever the little clips around.
Honestly,
the cap.
It's been sealed. Like, proper. Is it?
This is an outrage. Questions need to be asked at Portman Road, I think.
Bloody hell. Anyway, though.
They're giving you decoy water bottles. Ross, before we get into the nuts and bolts of the game, what did you make?
It was fittingly shambolic, given kind of what we're discussing.
Yeah. Ross v. Water bottle levels. Ross, what did you make of this one?
Oh, I really actually hurt my finger.
Have you actually have you drawn blood?
Nearly. Like, it's... I don't know if you can see it.
Oh, dear. If that was AJ, he'd be off to hospital.
Yeah, true. If you want to, obviously, if you're listening, make sure you subscribe because you'll see this visuals of me really hurting.
I can't actually see anything there, but anyway, I'll take your word for it. You've damaged yourself. It's like, okay.
A bit of skin there. Anyway.
Oh, dear. Back to the Arsenal game, Rossi. Give us your opening thoughts before we start talking about... I mean, obviously, there's one big talking point, but what was your thoughts on the game?
Arsenal are pretty good, aren't they?
They're a good team.
And I was surprised actually how strong they went because, eight players from the team that started at Real Madrid. So that was very strong. Odegaard, Saka, which we'll get onto, were just on fire, weren't they? And their first two goals were just really good team goals. It was like men against boys, I have to say. Town had a few little moments here and there. I thought did okay in that opening maybe 10 minutes, but Arsenal then just turned it, got their goal, and that was pretty much it. That was the game done, I hate to say it. Obviously there's only one change for Town. You know, Jacob Greaves coming in for Cameron Burgess. As Stu mentioned, Julio Enciso, normally he's in that position, he goes and scores, but he decides to pass it on to Hurst. When teams like Arsenal come to town, you always know it's going to be a tough game. And it was one of those games where that you saw the quality difference straight away. And a tough afternoon.
Stu, McKenna said, one of the other things he said post-game was it's the highest standard they've faced this season. Would you agree with that? Because obviously we've seen Man City come to Suffolk and spank town. We've seen various other heavy defeats against the bigger sides. Would you say that Arsenal were... in terms of standard, the best you've seen?
I guess a bit of recency bias always comes into play when you think about this because you've just seen it unfold in front of your eyes. I think it's important to note that we're talking about the first half an hour here when it's 11v11. Mikel Arteta actually backed that up as well and said that he thought that was potentially their best 30 minutes of the season, which sometimes when it's your manager saying it, but when it's backed up by the opposition manager, those are big words, aren't they? Given some of the performances at Arsenal.
You can't win the league now, Arteta. You can't win the league. You decided to turn up and play your best football.
Obviously the talk in the build-up was, as you say, would there be a bit of mental, physical fatigue from the burnabout? They can't catch Liverpool. They look pretty well set for a top five position. But hearing Arteta speak afterwards, the talk in their camp, and I think we saw that actually people picked up on the fact that Declan Rice name-dropped Ipswich on the pitch at the Bernabeu, we need to go again, we need to keep our standards high, and I think they know that they need to sort of build a rhythm now, and it's all about sort of consistency for Arsenal. If they're now going to take that next step from always the bridesmaids, never the bride, obviously we'll come on to some of the chants that were going on in the game, But about breaking this cycle of finishing second, that they now need to be, a bit like Liverpool have been this year, winning machines, consistent. And they certainly came with the right attitude into this game. Eight of the team that started in Madrid start this match and they were bang at it from the start. So, bang right up there in terms of the best Ipswich have faced, no doubt about it. Obviously, City have come here and won 6-0. They were pretty damn good that day. Newcastle, I was really impressed with Newcastle, 4-0 winners at Portman Road as well. Liverpool in both games, certainly Liverpool in the last 20 minutes at Portman Road on the opening day, Liverpool up at their place in spells as well. So that top end, that rarefied air of the Premier League is just, has been a bridge too far. That's the difference between the team that's just come from League One not so long ago to well-established top-end Premier League side that, like you say, levels.
Hmm. Okay, right. Well, there's clearly one big talking point from the game, so we may as well get into that now. Is it or isn't it? I am, of course, talking about the red card for Leif Davis. What kind of view did you get of this, Rossi, first of all? Were you, did you watch? Because here's my take on it. Watching it on TV, at first I thought, that's a yellow card. You know, just a run-of-the-mill yellow card. And then you watch the replay and you think, oh, actually, that's pretty bad. What do you make of it, Rossi?
Yeah, I will admit I missed it because I was putting
classic.
Classic Roscoe. I was putting in pictures. I was basically putting the Arsenal second goal in.
Yeah.
The image drive. And I looked up and I just saw Saka on the floor and Davis just like going, I didn't do anything. But obviously watching it back, and I'm sure we'll do a massive debate on it. At first, I thought it weren't that bad. And I thought that's a bit soft. But when you really think about it and take the blue tinted glasses off, you do go, it was a needless challenge on the halfway line. And he could have maybe come out of it. But I will admit, at first, I thought, ref's having a mare here. You know, why haven't they gone to VAR about it? But when you look into it a bit more, then yeah, it's a red for me. Because he's got studs in. And obviously, he's not going near to hurt Saka, but he's just sort of left one on him a little bit because I think he feel like he can still get the ball, but obviously he didn't get anywhere near the ball. But yeah, a big debate to have. So let's go.
Right. So Rossi thinks it is a red card. I certainly thought it wasn't to begin with. And I want to hear your thoughts, Stewie, because it has properly split people from what I've seen. A lot of people saying it's a definite red. Silly. Other people saying no, it's a yellow. Nothing more than a yellow. Where do you stand on this, Stewie?
Red card for me, and I felt it fairly quickly at the time. I can understand in the crowd, if you only saw it once,
yeah,
live, that, as you say, the feeling is that felt maybe a little bit soft because it's kind of, it's not a thunderous challenge that's gone in. It felt sort of innocuous, didn't it, at the time? And it looked on first showing that it's an overreaction from Saka, who jumps right up in the air and stays down hurt, and then people see him get up and run around fine afterwards. So I understand why they were probably, those inside the ground felt aggrieved by it, and why Saka maybe became a bit of a boo boy. But I was a little bit surprised that there was still a debate raging on social media. The people that were at home that had the benefit of the replays, I don't see how you can't think that's a red card. And that was my initial gut feeling. And I think, you know, if you've watched any kind of punditry or analysis of the game, everyone sort of concurs that it was a red. Even Kieran McKenna says, yeah, I don't think there can be too many complaints. So ultimately, first viewing, maybe you think, oh, that's a yellow. But watching it back, I think most people will agree it's a red. It probably falls, I've heard a few people use the phrase sort of amber. It's one of those that maybe falls in between a yellow and a red. But overall feeling of this is that it's just a completely unnecessary challenge from Leif Davis. He can't win the ball there. He's got man between him and ball. I don't know what he's trying to achieve, to be honest. And he's given the referee a decision to make. That's my main takeaway from this.
It wasn't wantonly dangerous, was it? It wasn't one of these kind of leg breaker straight reds that you think, God, that's horrendous. As you say, in the first viewing, it's like, oh, we see two or three of that sort of thing again. But then you watch it back, and as you say, I'd agree with you. It's definitely a red card because he's high up the leg. He's raking the studs down the back of the leg, potentially injure the player. I don't think he wasn't obviously clearly trying to hurt him. He wasn't reckless in that sense, but it was something that for me deserved a red.
Yeah, I don't think it was super high. Kieran McKenna talked about it being high. It's sort of he plants his studs on sort of the back of the Achilles, doesn't he? I don't really know what he was trying to achieve. I saw Stephen Warnock talking about it on Ref Watch on Sky Sports News this morning, and he said, you know, as a defender himself, former defender himself, that it might be one of those that he's just trying to let Saka know he's never going to win the ball. Maybe he's trying to sort of poke his foot between the player's legs and get a little toe on it. It didn't look like that sort of action. So I think what it is sometimes you're just trying to let the winger know after the ball's gone, I'm close to you. So next time you get the ball, and you're trying to pop a little pass or sort of turn, you've just got to feel my breath down your neck that I'm there as a defender. And he's just maybe overstepped a little bit. He does actually slip a little bit if you watch it back. His planting leg does sort of slide, he almost slides into the tackle. And I noticed a few players lost their footing on this. So maybe, you know, wrong choice of studs, pitch watered. I don't know if an element of that came into play, if I'm being overly kind. But
there was a moment with Trossard as well. I think for the second goal that Arsenal scored, he had a little bit of a collision with Trossard. So it's sort of like it's already happened in the game. Obviously, I don't think it was the same sort of challenge, but there was a moment. So, yeah, maybe new footwear needs to be looked at.
Yeah, so I think he's just having a little nip at him, a little just sort of I'm here, I'm at your back, sort of for next time, and he's just he's just got it wrong, hasn't he? But it's on the halfway line. There's no danger on. It was pretty unnecessary, and left his teammates in a hole and left us watching a pretty farcical football match for the remainder of the hour, you know, that was left.
Yeah, it was basically a glorified training exercise from that point onwards, wasn't it? So Leaf will miss three games. He'll miss the trip to Newcastle on Saturday, which obviously, I guess, from his point of view, is the match he most want to play in, given his allegiances. And it also leaves Rossi, or Town Rossi, without a kind of recognised left back, if we're thinking that Connor Townsend is not going to be fit for Saturday. They do have one. There's a very young one on the bench in Somto Boniface. You've obviously seen him probably play more than most Town fans. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Good name.
It's a great name. It's fun to say.
It's very fun. I've only actually seen him play, I think, twice, because obviously it was a deadline day signing from Chelsea. And I've only seen him play twice, but he has played, I think, five or six times. And he has scored in his last two games for the under-21s. Really done well. Obviously, he's the only left back we've got. As we record this, we'll find out more, I'm sure, about Conn Townsend later in the week. Good to see a youngster on the bench. You know, we had Tommy Taylor in the FA Cup game against Forest early in the season, last month. It was good to see, you know, Boniface there. Obviously, he's only there because we need a body on the bench, but McKenna's sort of given him, he's done well, trained well with the first team when he's played, been involved. He's a modern-day fullback. He's very pacey, got skills on him. Was their Academy Scholar Player of the Year a few years back for Chelsea. He's been there since like the age of, I think, nine or something like that. So he's been there for a very long time. Capped England's under-18s, part of the under-17s team that finished fifth in the Euros a few years back. So once again, I think Town, that's what Town are looking at in terms of their young players, signing players. Like they've obviously signed Tudor from Anderlecht last summer. So they're earmarking these sort of young stars at these other big clubs because they may not have a future at Chelsea, but he could have maybe a future here. So one definitely to watch, and just good to see another youngster on the bench. And there was actually, when I was looking over the bench, Rio Morgan and Tommy Taylor was actually on the bench as well. So maybe they're not the, you know, how many players is there? It's like maybe the squad of 22. So they were just in the background there. So yeah, it's good to see those youngsters. And this is an opportunity. We've got five games left to go. You've got nothing to lose, really, now. Do you see these players potentially come on? So, Boniface, could he come on and make his Premier League debut? You never know.
Sounds like there's a piece to be written there, Stu, as we look for content going forward. Let's just, we all then agree that it's a red. Let's just hear from McKenna what he said about it, and then we can move on.
Now, at the time, I didn't think it was, but it's, you know, it's on the far side of the pitch, and that's probably more in line of knowing Leaf really as a player, and I don't think he's got a malicious bone really, so I don't think there'll be intent to injure. But when you see it on the video, it's obviously a high challenge again. I'm pretty certain with no intent, but it's a high challenge, so I can see why the referee give it, and when it's given, it's never going to be overruled. So you know, I don't think too many complaints.
Okay, so unanimous
on the Saka reaction that seems to have sort of angered people.
What's the reaction to being fouled?
He sort of jumps up in the air, doesn't he, and goes down. I mean, he's clearly been caught. And I think also the fact that it's from his blind side. Normally, if you see a tackle coming, you know, human nature is you can kind of prepare for it, brace yourself, start to jump out the way, move. But the fact that it's completely from his blind side, you know, you will act with shock if you suddenly feel something hit you on the back of your ankle like that. I think the still images show his ankle does buckle underneath him. I'm not sort of comfortable with people kind of talking about that being play acting and dark arts, and Ipswich need to be better at that. I think, you know, that is a natural reaction. I understand in the stadium at the time that maybe people didn't fully appreciate the level of contact, but now in the cold light of day, looking at it, I think hopefully people can realise that it was a red, and I don't think it was a massive overreaction. I don't know if that will be a popular thing to say, but obviously the fact it is Saka is Arsenal's star man, and the fact that he has only just come back from a reasonably long-term injury himself kind of added to it, with people like Piers Morgan jumping in his inimitable fashion on X, etc., kind of added to it. But we don't need to make a massive thing out of this. It was a unnecessary poor challenge. He's taken his punishment. It is what it is. I guess it adds to this kind of, we've had this debate all season, haven't we, about Leaf's attacking qualities versus maybe some slight defensive deficiencies. He's come a long way with his defensive game, but up against the world's best in the Premier League, he's had some difficulties at times, hasn't he? So hopefully he, like many others, will be better for this chastening experience.
Chastening, good word. What did you make of the booing, Stewie? I appreciate this all panto and all that kind of stuff, but the fact that Saka then got booed every time he touched the ball, I thought was just a bit silly, if I'm honest.
As I say, I understood it at the time. People come to support your team and back your team, and you only get that one watch at the time, so that's fine. I found the sort of, then it became this slightly weird bad blood between Arsenal and Ipswich fans, that sort of, I guess Arsenal fans are then, Ipswich fans are protecting their own player. I get that Leif Davis kind of, people say, why are we applauding a player off the pitch when he's just got a silly red card? Mm. Well, you know, he's gone off tapping his badge, apologetic, and, you know, that's you just sort of saying, you know, not condoning the tackle, but you're just showing a bit of support to your player. Fine. Booing Saka, probably didn't realise how bad the contact was. Back in your team, fine. Then Arsenal fans, you know, are a bit sore that their player is, in their eyes, unfairly getting booed. So then they start going down the route of chants about Ipswich getting relegated. Ipswich fans are then thinking, well, why have you not got bigger fish to fry here? Arsenal, why are you worrying about us getting relegated? That sort of thing. So then there's chants about them second again, ole ole. And it sort of went to and fro. And it actually got quite sort of amped up, the atmosphere at the back end of that first half. Real edge to it, and you wondered if it was going to kind of spill over into the game at times. Sam Morsy kind of was one that I thought might kind of, you know, maybe get a bit carried away with it. But, you know, in the end, the second half petered away and got pretty flat, because it was a non-contest, wasn't it? But, yeah, I didn't have Arsenal versus Ipswich rivalry bubbling up down on, you know, predictions going into this one. So I don't know if memories will last long. You know, various YouTubers from Arsenal talking about, hope Ipswich don't ever get back in the Premier League again. It's all a bit silly, really. Like you say, pantomime probably sums it up best.
Yeah, it is a bit silly. Right, let's hear from the man with the best accent, the best voice in Ipswich Town squad, and that's George Hurst. I love listening to this man talk. Here's what he said about the defeat.
George, that must have been a tough afternoon all round.
Yeah, definitely. You know, obviously you're playing against one of the best teams in the world, and we knew that going into the game, and, you know, we had a plan to try and stop them, and ultimately, you know, things like the red card and whatnot, it sort of alters that. But, you know, I think the boys just dug in and showed great character, and yeah, sometimes the quality is just too much.
Leaf must be gassed.
Yeah, naturally, you know, he feels like he's let the boys down, but, you know, it's one of those things. It's not the first red card in football history, so it's about, we're a team, and, you know, it's not Leaf's fault, it's not anyone's fault, it's a team, it's a collective, and yeah, the boys will get around them, and they'll be disappointed and whatnot, but yeah, it's part and parcel of football, and yeah, but I thought we dealt with it after that pretty well, to be fair.
It was going to be difficult 11 against 11, but when you are a man, like, for an hour in the end?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think we sort of, to a man, we were excellent at that point. It's very easy to sort of go under, and you know, that game, you know, I've seen it before where it gets sort of silly with the scoreline, and I think until late on when they sort of cause with a couple of short set pieces, you know, we're a man light, and they've got the quality to go and cause you issues. But up until that point, I thought on the whole, we sort of limited them to chances, and that's what it was all about. You know, it was just about showing the togetherness and showing a bit of character.
And so hard up there for you as well, battling away.
Yeah, that's I don't mind that. It's, you know, that's part and parcel of the job. And you know, whether there's 11 men on the pitch, 10 men, it, to me, my role is the same. It's to help the team to, you know, fight with the centre halves who are top centre halves, and you know, go and assert myself, and especially when we're down to 10 men, sort of give the rest of the boys a little bit of a breather. You know, I felt like I did that today, and yeah, it was a tough day, but you know, one will learn from.
The dulcet tones of George Hurst there. Ross, is there anything else you want to highlight from this game? Oh, there's a bit of a talking point about McKenna, which I want to come on to, but is there anything else you want to kind of highlight before we get to that?
I thought George Hurst had a pretty good game, to be fair, being that lone striker, especially when we had to play five. I'm trying to think now, the formation it would have been 5-3-1 or whatever. That's not even made up to 10 players is on the pitch. Still, you know the tactics, you know formations.
I think what you're trying to say is it's thankless what he was doing, and it is, isn't it? You know, it's one of those things where you know you're gonna have to run yourself into the ground.
He had a chance.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, that was probably Town's best chance, wasn't it?
You know, obviously he's leading the line now. We've obviously the lap with that. We've got that rib issue, so I've got an opportunity to sort of play in the top flight, you know, regularly at the moment. But yeah, when you're playing against world class defenders, it's going to be a tough afternoon for him. But it's not many other takeaways really. It was just one of those games, as you mentioned. It was just a training, you know, ground match, you know, just training session where Arsenal are just picking the balls along. Obviously scored their two other goals later on. Obviously Odegaard is just class, isn't he? He's just a class player. And I think, what goal was it? It was the third goal. Defensively, that was shocking. That was just not good. I'm sure McKenna was not happy with that. But obviously George Hurst was part of that defensive unit. I'm like, what's George doing there? But yeah, I'm sure goals they'll look back on and go, we need to do better. But just one of those games where it just went away from us, and thankfully it was only four because it could have been more.
Is there anything you want to talk about, Stu, before we get to this McKenna stuff?
Yeah, I think it's right to highlight George Hurst's performance, as you say, completely thankless task up front. But again, I thought that was another little positive tick in his box, the way he sort of battled and made it stick at times, was always in an outlet, had that chance where he darted in from the left and bent one just wide, similar to chance he had in the Chelsea game, actually. Went pretty close with one from a very similar position. So he was good. I thought Axel Tuanzebe had a really good game again. A couple of big blocks in the first half, did well. Sam Morsi I put sort of higher up the list in terms of performance in again, really difficult circumstances against elite players. I thought he certainly in the second half battled well. Not sure how I feel about the second half. It was a very uncomfortable watch because Arsenal ended with 75% possession. One stat that jumped off the page was touches inside the opposition box. Ipswich had 5, Arsenal had 70.
wow.
You know, it's 4 shots versus 24. It's damage limitation, obviously. And then you can have a debate now about how Ipswich should have approached this game, how they should then approach it once it goes to 10. Kieran's kind of highlighted that, you know, the organisation and the spirit and the resilience in that second half and didn't go under. Let's be honest, Arsenal aren't exactly foot to the floor at that stage. They've just come back from Madrid. It's job done. They've got a midweek game against Palace coming up as well. So there were moments where Ipswich played out from the back quite nicely, but Ipswich weren't kind of, their high press wasn't exactly at full throttle at that stage. So I think any kind of positives you take from that first half have to be kind of caveated by the fact that Arsenal, I think, were at walking pace, and it did feel almost at walking pace at times. You know, glorified training session, it really was. It was like an attack v defence, low block. Yes, Ipswich limited them to kind of few key chances, to be fair. But that third goal's really poor. I know we're talking about Arsenal are really good at set pieces, one of the best in the world. And I know we're talking about them having an extra man to play with, but that the fourth one, there's an element of kind of fortune, the way he kind of dances along the box and it takes a couple of couple of nicks, but the third one, that reverse pass, I think from Rice into Trossard, it's just where's the marking? You know, you haven't got close enough for the short one. Okay, if you haven't gone out to deal with the man that's gone to go short, then you should at least then be man v man inside the box, and he was just completely unmarked. So that was poor. And you know, if we're talking about Arsenal being elite, world class players, that wasn't a world class goal. Those are the goals that Ipswich need to go back through this season and look at those sort of ones where they've just not been good enough defensively at times.
I didn't think the first two goals were great either, from a town point of view, if I'm honest. The first goal, it's like in slow motion, the first goal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Trossard had three players around him and he still had time to sort of get up and just poke into it. Second goal, I think Davies gets caught high, doesn't it? And it's Saka against Greaves, which is a total mismatch. And clearly there was a bit of nice skill for the finish. But again, I don't think either of the first two goals were exactly great from town. Stu, the McKenna chat around tactics and did he get it wrong for this game? We saw Alan Pardew spitting fire on TalkSport, saying it was insipid and he was fuming about it. And I think you said there was some criticism as well on Match of the Day too, which I suppose is worthy of talking about, isn't it? Clearly, Kieran McKenna is not above criticism. Just because he's done what he's done at Town doesn't mean he's always going to get it right. And that's an inevitable part of learning, isn't it? You make mistakes, you get better. Did you think any of this criticism was valid post-match?
The first thing I'll say is that there's some contradictions at play here, which probably shows you something. So Alan Pardew's criticism was that it was too defensive. If you listen to him, it's not quite sure the point that he was making, but he'd watched the game and it made him feel really angry, which I guess as a neutral, when you're seeing kind of Ipswich sitting in a low block and all those stats that I've just mentioned, and non-contest, I can kind of understand that being the emotional reaction to it. But then he talks about, you know, basically it was too defensive from Ipswich. So the counter argument to that is, if Ipswich had gone more attacking and more gung ho and left themselves open and conceded more goals, he'd have probably been called naive, which has been levelled at Ipswich earlier in the season. Then I watched Match of the Day too, and Ashley Williams again was on punditry duties. He then talked about it being Ipswich being too easy and open to play against. So I guess his insinuation there, again, he thinks that McKenna got the tactics wrong. So is his insinuation that Ipswich were too attacking, if they were too open? So you can't win. When you kind of ask people to drill down into the tactically naive, got it wrong tactically this season, I never kind of quite hear what the solutions are. I think it's really important to highlight what was at McKenna's disposal for this game. The injury list is this: Phillips, Hutchinson, Ogbeni, Burns, Schmodix, Philogene, Broadhead and Townsend, all injured. And then you've got Connor Chaplin and Liam Delap, both half fit. Chaplin's not started a game this calendar year. Liam Delap, as we know, has got this rib injury, so he's not fit to start. So he hasn't got a lot to play with. I think back five, this sort of wing-backy system, which it was the right way to go. It's the Arsenal reverse game where they kind of first switched to a back five. And I know it's fluid and we've been having this debate throughout McKenna's reign about what number do you put on it? Is it a back four? Is it a back five? Davies covers the whole left side, et cetera, et cetera. But it was after that 4-0 Newcastle game where he changed, in my eyes, to more of a back five. And I think whenever Ben Johnson plays that right-sided role, it looks more wing-backy. And so I don't really know what the alternative is. The only thing that I could say about this season in terms of making Ipswich harder to beat is, should maybe an extra body in midfield have been considered or tried at some stage? Go with a Morsi, Kajusta, Phillips three at some stage, or put Taylor in there and make it a proper midfield three. That's about the only solution that I think you could come up with to try and make it even more solidified. But this kind of whole tactically he's got it wrong, tactically he's been too stubborn, tactically he's not been flexible or adaptable, I think is wide of the mark. I think Kieran McKenna has tried different things. I think he has reacted to different scenarios this season. I don't know, looking at the players at his disposal, what was the alternative going into this game? That's what I would challenge people to look at that list of players and come up with a different way of approaching that game.
I think ultimately, Rossi, as well, as much as Kieran McKenna is a brilliant manager and he's definitely not just kind of setting his ways in one particular way, as Stu's just very eloquently explained there. Nick Ames wrote a piece for The Guardian, which I don't know if you've seen, but it was really, I thought, spot on, where he essentially said that Town have kind of managed to be fairly competitive all season whilst also being definitely not good enough. And that's ultimately what it comes down to, isn't it? You can be the best manager in the world, but if ultimately, and I don't mean this in a defensive, derogatory way, they're making a huge step up. A lot of them have never played in the Premier League. There's no shame in not being quite at that level. But I think ultimately, in the kind of final breakdown of the season, that's just the kind of harsh fact, is that they're just not good enough at this level.
Yeah, that is the sad thing about it. Obviously, a lot of people have been criticising the recruitment. That's another thing, because we've spent over 150 million and there's a lot of people out there saying, yeah, well, you've signed players who are not good enough for the league, so why, you know, you shouldn't expect to be staying up. And yeah, now obviously we're down to bare bones. I know everyone gets injuries, but we're now really struggling with those injuries in key positions as well. But yeah, some players have been able to have little moments. Obviously, Delap's been the big one who's really has stepped up and has shown he can play in the Premier League. There's been a few little moments here and there. I felt like other players have done okay, but deep down, yeah, they are just not good enough. And that is the reality that we're facing. And the thing is, we've jokingly said, like, we're going to have an unbelievable championship team, a team that's going to be a championship superstar team that will hopefully bounce back straight away. But it's easier said than done. But yeah, deep down, we've been competitive, but just not good enough. And it's the story of the season. Be competitive, have moments. I think that was actually in this game. That basically that attack, Julio and Cesar attack, from that to then conceding because we, you know, didn't capitalise on that opportunity. So, yeah, obviously we're going to have a big end of season podcast discussing what went wrong, and that'll be interesting, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'll pick up on a couple of points there. I think it's worth a wider debate. One is the sort of championship superstar team, which I completely get that's the narrative, and Ipswich's recruitment was centred around sort of best of the best in the championship last season. When I sort of look at the names on paper and then maybe you strip away two or three, we'll probably go Delap nailed on. I would say then Hutchinson, O'Shea in the sort of possibly camp. But so, say you strip those away, which are the championship superstars that we're looking at? Jack Clark? Jacob Greaves, who was in Championship Team of the Season.
Palmer.
Yeah, so look, there is a solid championship team there. I'm slightly worried that there's going to be a bit of overconfidence going into next season because the Champ is a difficult league. What was the other point I was going to make? The one is around recruitment. And again, this sort of comes back to this is the other thing. I've just sort of said, what was the alternative in terms of the teams that could get put out there? And then the next counter argument to that is, well, in which case we should have signed more Premier League experience. How? Who? Would be the response to that. I'm sure it's something that Ipswich, well, I know it's something that Ipswich did explore last summer.
Yeah.
But ultimately, if you're an established, experienced Premier League player, you're not going to be agreeing to relegation 50% reduction clauses. And if you're coming, and as much as we're saying Ipswich should be a good sell with Kieran McKenna staying and ambitious owners and feel good factor around a sold out stadium, all the good stuff that we know about. If you're honest, if you put yourself away from the Ipswich bubble, it's probably still quite a difficult sell. 22 years away, Ipswich haven't got the name that it once had. Certain clauses that they would have been wanting, big money. Ultimately, Ipswich had a decision to make, and it would have been a risk trying to take on, you know, maybe an older, established player that if you didn't stay up, could leave you in a bit of a difficult situation. Ipswich, I think, you know, it was a brave decision not to push themselves too far in that front. It was always going to, you know, potential that was going to leave them short. They did sign an experienced Premier League player in Calvin Phillips, of course, and they've just never been able to keep him fit. So there's a lot of could they, there's a lot of should they have done things differently, but I think the first question is could they have done things differently, and I think I'm not sure that there is loads, if I'm honest, and that's not being me being a cheerleader of the club, being an apologist for some of the things that have happened. I just think there's just been a lot of things outside of their control, and you know, it's they've ultimately come up short
in life. Do you know what winds me up almost more than anything? And that's beanbags. That's completely irrelevant to this discussion. The other thing that really annoys me, beanbags are useless. What's the point? The other thing that really gets my goat in this context is after timers, captain hindsights. Like, no one at the time when Town was signing all these players was going, well, they aren't good enough. What are we doing? And yet now that seems to be like, well, it was obvious. They didn't recruit enough Premier League experience. It just really winds me up, that kind of narrow-mindedness. Oh, I thought at the time, but I didn't say anything. But now I'm going to say it because it's, you know, that kind of thing. It just annoys me. Like, anyway, that's just me. Rossi, am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. But if there is anybody out there who did say that and they can prove it, then go
bring
ahead.
The receipts.
There's a few people.
Bring the receipts. You know what? That's what I say.
Big shout out to Mike the Turbo Sailor. I know he was a bit concerned. Like the first few game days of the season, he was a bit concerned that we maybe signed too many players, and he was a bit worried. And obviously, we went on to obviously lose a lot of those opening games. But yeah, it's hindsight, and
again, that's a really difficult balance. And the feeling at the time was the club was very aware that you needed to retain that team spirit, chemistry, togetherness, and momentum that's got you there, but also eyes wide open that it was a huge leap up, and doing nothing wasn't an option either. And I think they came to the conclusion that it was a 50-50 split. They brought in basically that, you know, the idea was that, you know, the starting 11, Bar Hlaki, he kind of stayed, didn't they? Don't think I'm missing anyone. And then they tried to kind of put another team on top of that to raise standards. So they tried to get that sort of 50-50 balance. I think, again, damned if you do, damned if you don't. If they'd have done less business, they'd have left themselves open to not been ambitious enough. And if they'd have done, you know, if they'd have got rid of more of that team, there would have been a feeling of kind of upsetting the apple cart too much as well. And I think ultimately they came to the right sort of 50-50 balance in terms of what they tried to do. It's just not been enough.
I think I'm still angry about, on the captain hindsight front,
when Andy Ruiz, beanbag, then.
Yeah, when Andy Ruiz knocked out Anthony Joshua. Oh, Stu's going to have to make a move. Yeah. Andy Ruiz knocked out Anthony Joshua in New York all those years ago. And afterwards, people are going, yeah, I knew that was going to happen. He didn't, mate.
No.
You can't say afterwards you knew it was going to happen when before you were saying Joshua by KO, he's fighting a little fat little pudding man. So that annoys me, after timers, hindsighters in general life. Anyway, I've got that off my chest. And beanbags. Beanbags are pointless. Stu, have you got any beanbags in the?
No beanbags in my house, no.
They're pointless. There's no form to them. You sit in them, they're incredibly uncomfortable. You can't get out of them. They, like, envelop you.
Then they split and you get the little polystyrene balls everywhere.
They're an absolute travesty, beanbags. Anyway, friend, the other thing I want to talk to you about on this general theme of McKenna, and we haven't had a chance because you were off last week, obviously moving house, is you asked McKenna about his future, which is, I think, as far as I'm aware, the first time that anyone had done that. And that came from the power of the pod, essentially. I think it was Simon, wasn't it? Simon English, who suggested, wants to know if we could ask that. You duly did, and McKenna basically said, I want to be here. How are we feeling, though, Stu, as it gets more and more, well, essentially sealed that relegation is going to happen? We've talked about Delap and maybe other players leaving. There will surely still be some sort of conversation around McKenna this summer. How confident do you feel that he will be here when the championship kicks off in August?
Pretty confident. Never say 100%, can you? But it feels like I don't think his stock has taken much of a knocking, to be honest. I think those in the game have been able to, you know, you only have to hear what all the opposition managers say about him week on week, that they can see what he's trying to do. And players will have improved this season. It's not as obvious when the results aren't there, but, you know, he will have developed players individually. You've only got to look at Liam Delap this season and, you know, how far he's come, McKenna will have played a big part in that behind the scenes. So that's something like that will have added to his reputation. So he's certainly absolutely not in any kind of sacking conversation, is he, from an Ipswich Town point of view, when you see what others around Ipswich have done this season. It's more a conversation as to, I would say it's more in the category of a poaching situation. There's precedent there with Vincent Kompany last season, leaving Burnley after relegation and going to Bayern. Mm. I would say with Kompany, there's probably a little bit of kind of elite player tax added to that as well, which McKenna hasn't quite got that same name. Not saying that's right, but that does come into play sometimes. So it would then be a case of kind of where would Kieran go? Who would look for him? I know people have talked about Tottenham for quite some time. It feels like, you know, again, Tottenham lost again at the weekend. If they don't win the Europa League, then you would think Ange's on pretty thin ice. Would Tottenham look to McKenna now, given their juncture and their struggles? I'm not so sure. I mean, they've tried everything, haven't they, Tottenham? Big names, up and coming, you know, different tact with Ange. I don't know what direction they'll look at next, but I'm not convinced that Kieran McKenna would necessarily fly with their fan base going out at a difficult time and getting someone who's just got relegated. It was an interesting point from our columnist Terry Hunt today that he talked about. He doesn't see Tottenham going for McKenna now, but he could see them going perhaps for Iraola at Bournemouth. And then there's a Bournemouth job available and the dominoes could fall and maybe Bournemouth would look for a McKenna type potentially. Mm. And would that turn his head at a more established Premier League club who have got their multi-million pound training base open now? Don't know. He certainly talks very fondly about Ipswich, about the area, about settled in. It feels like there's a bit of unfinished business for him still. Pretty confident, I think, but never say never.
Yeah. This ties in as well to comments that we had from Axel Turnsaby and Jack Clark about Town potentially being one of the biggest clubs in England, Rossi, which we had over the last couple of days, last couple of weeks, maybe. And it feels like, yes, they're going to take a step backwards this season. And clearly the goal was to stay in the Premier League, and that was always a massive ask. But in terms of why, if you zoom out from the kind of immediate and go to sort of the bigger picture, it still feels very much like Town have got a huge amount of momentum behind them, doesn't it? And there is something growing happening, you know, in this project. And there's a lot more legs in that, which you can see McKenna wanting to be part of.
Yeah, and especially all the plans that they've got, you know, in terms of the training grounds, Category 1 Academy as well. There is a lot to be excited for. Yeah, we're going to get relegated back to the Championship, but there's a lot happening. Obviously, season tickets are like gold dust. You know, pretty much sell out every home game, away, you know, tickets, gold dust as well. So lots to still be, you know, really, you know, positive about, because this club is in a better position than it was, you know, a few years back. And I'm sure it will be an opportunity for a lot of players to look at that and go, yeah, that's a good project there. I'm sure Mark Ashton will make sure he wants to keep hold of Kieran McKenna as long as possible. Obviously, he signed that new deal in the summer, so you know, a club have to cost them a little bit if they want to get him. Ipswich have always been a big club. Obviously, they're not at the stage of like Arsenal and those sort of teams, because they've obviously been established for so long in terms of being in the Premier League, and they've got that American base. They've got, like, you know, in Asia market as well. Obviously, Town have sort of behind because of that, because they've not been in the top flight for so long. Obviously, we were a massive club in the 70s and 80s because we were one of the best clubs, not in England, but in Europe as well. And obviously we've gone backwards because of the last 20 years. But there is a fan base there that's ready to sort of blow up, because, you know, Ipswich Town is a small town, but it's got a big fan base. And I'm sure there'd be many more comments to come out about, you know, the project here, because I can't wait to see that training ground. And hopefully we can develop more young players as well, because that's another thing I think a lot of people are getting frustrated about. It's great to see, like, Boniface on the bench, even though he's not one of ours in some sort of way. But they want to see more younger players, because that's what Ipswich was always about, wasn't it? Bringing through the young players. So hopefully Category 1 will help. and obviously the training ground will help as well. But yeah, I'm going a bit of a tangent here, as I normally do. But Ipswich Town, everything's all right, ladies and gentlemen. Everything's fine.
Everything's going to be
going down, okay.
Well, yeah, but as I say, the wider picture, I think, still looks pretty bloody rosy. Stewie, in terms of the wider picture, we talked about Town in the Championship next season and them immediately being the favourites or among the favourites. We know that two sides who aren't going to be in the Championship next season, one of them's Leeds, and you talked about kind of wanting Leeds to get promoted, Leeds and Burnley. Obviously, both got promoted yesterday. Any thoughts on that in terms of the shape of the Championship next season?
Yeah, I think it's good that Leeds will be out of it from an Ipswich point of view. Yeah, you want those sort of best teams out the way. I need to have a little reminder of the Championship table in terms of the playoff positions. Who do we want to win those? Probably, I mean, Sheffield United are obviously 10 points clear of Sunderland. Would be a club with parachute payments, so you probably want them as the kind of the strongest out of the kind of playoff pushing sides at the moment to be out of the picture, which would leave Ipswich in a far stronger position financially, squad-wise, than pretty much everyone else there that I can see remaining in the Championship. Then you look at the two teams coming down with Ipswich. Leicester and Southampton have got themselves in a bit of a pickle with their managerial decisions this year. Was it nine straight home defeats for Leicester without a goal under Ruud van Nistelrooy? We'll see what they end up doing in preparation for next year. They've got sort of an older squad that's going to need a bit of a rehaul. Southampton, again, maybe are they regretting getting rid of Russell Martin and going down the route they have? They've got to get their house in order fairly significantly as well. So it's all pointing towards Ipswich starting next year as favourites, which makes me slightly uncomfortable. As I say, it's going to take a complete different mindset shift from everybody, fans, players, to go from, you know, being major underdogs every week to being expected to win every week, and going from winning one home game all season to being expecting to win every time they step out at Portman Road. How are they going to handle that? That's going to be interesting. Yeah, I hope they can finish this season on a positive note. I think the next few games are difficult, but you know, Leicester away and West Ham at home to finish. Hopefully they can finish on a bit of a positive note and take that off into the summer.
The other, I guess, you should throw into the Championship interesting mix next season is Birmingham, of course. A massive club.
The ones coming from below. Yeah. Birmingham. See who else joins them. Wrexham, potentially. Is that done yet?
No, I think Wickham are still fighting.
Wickham lost, didn't they? So, as much as, Wickham have been the sort of the story, haven't they, this year, with Cam Humphreys doing so well for them. They lost, didn't they, to Charlton 3-0 over the weekend. So they've slipped below Wrexham now, having a look at it. So, the ones coming from below, most notably Birmingham, I think Ross mentioned it before, have got a kind of Ipswich 2.0 feeling about them, or certainly an Ipswich similarity to them, haven't they, with the American owners and the momentum and the stature of them. So that'll be interesting.
If Wrexham do come up, guaranteed first game of the season, home, Portman Road, maybe even at Wrexham, on Sky, Town versus Wrexham. See that. Very interesting, as you say, see what happens at Leicester. So there's all sorts of stuff going on there. Vestergaard, their big defenders, not been in the team. Apparently, Ruud van Nistelrooy doesn't think he wants to play. I was listening to something on the radio last night that says all about the culture at Leicester being wrong and players bringing dogs to training with them and that kind of stuff, which to me sounds pretty nice. I don't know why that's a problem. Certainly a big conversation there about Leicester next season. Friends, anything else to mention before we take our leave? You got anything to bring up, Rossi or Stewie? I'll tell you what, Stewie, when you were moving house, did you try any of your Stardust spirits to celebrate? Or are they still in a little pack somewhere yet to be cracked?
I got to find the box they're in, if I'm completely honest. I'm still opening boxes and finding last minute panic boxes where you just like fling everything in into a miscellaneous box.
Yeah, the miscellaneous room as well when you move house, which everything is for the first kind of few months.
Yet to partake, but you should, listeners.
Absolutely.
By using the code, is that
the absolute code? Yes, KKOA, stardustspirits.co.uk. I can particularly recommend, as I've already said, the Cascades rum, very, very nice, and the single malt, which is fantastic. And I know AJ's a huge fan of the chocolate rum. So if you've not used those that code yet, go and buy yourself a bottle or indeed some samplers. Have a little triple pack and see what you fancy. Rossi, speaking of, there is your little sampler. Again, still unopened, Rossi, very disappointed.
Waiting until I move house.
Okay, that's what you're saving for a celebration. Yeah. We're talking about dogs there, Rossi. Did Jasper win Best Barnet at the dog show yesterday?
No, I don't think we actually entered him into that. Oh, I think we got sort of distracted by other things. I was eating a hog roast. I had hog roast. That was nice. But yeah, Jasper, bless him. I think he got a bit overwhelmed because obviously there's a lot of dogs because it's a dog show, obviously. So I think he got a bit overwhelmed of the noises and the smells and all the dogs. But he did get a rosette for winning like sitting down and getting his paw up and all that. So, you know, he's got that down. He also ran over some hurdles or run over.
Oh, right. He did some agility, did he?
He did some agility. He's a quick boy, bless him. When he gets a ball, when he get a ball chucked at him or over there, he's going for it and he brings it back. So he won one little award. But the best Barnet, I don't know if that was a competition or not.
It should be.
He's in a class of one.
Is Bluey trained, Stewie? Because I remember I used to have a rabbit. Fiver, dear old Fiver, in my teenage years. Actually, I got him for my 10th birthday. He lived until I think I was 18, and I was very sad when he died. But he thought he was a dog. He would beg for food and stuff like that. Has Bluey got any kind of canine traits? Is he trained in any way? Yeah.
Yeah, he follow you around, and I think he thinks he's a human in terms of if you got a bowl of crisps out or something, he'll have a bit. Yeah, be all over that.
It's Five used to get carried away and start humping my leg. Is there any of that in Bluey?
Yeah, he does do that sometimes. Get some exercise, yeah.
Overstimulated.
It's that time of year as well. He does pester my wife.
Outstanding. I think that's where we should finish today's pod. Friends. Oh, yes, Rossi.
And by the way, to end the cliffhanger.
Oh, you've got it open.
I've done it. Well done.
Oh, lovely stuff. It's only cost you a potential severed thumb and a dislocated wrist.
Yeah, he's done an axle. Also,
some water. Oh, no. Oh, definitely not that far. But there is water on the desk. I'll have to wipe that off. But hydrated.
Dear. Right then, Stuart, you've got a new house. Which are your three toilets you're now going to use to celebrate this pod?
All three.
All three?
Yeah.
Amazing. Why not? You've got them. Flaunt them, so to speak. Friends.
Impeccable bladder control.
And again, that's a good place to end this pod. Friends, I hope you enjoyed this Tuesday pod, actually. We'll be back in short order on I guess it'll be Friday now, won't it? Because press will be Thursday. To look ahead to Newcastle, obviously the likelihood that Town are going to get relegated on Saturday. But also, excitingly, the women are likely to be promoted on Sunday, so there's going to be ups and downs this weekend. We'll be back later on this week to build towards that. Just a reminder to use that code KOA at stardustspirits.co.uk to get 20% off all that excellent stuff. And also, if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, that just helps lift us visibility wise in the charts and helps more people find this particular podcast. Friends, I hope you had a good Easter. I hope the week has started well for you. I hope you enjoyed hearing us talk about toilets, rabbits, dogs, and obviously the main takeaway is that beanbags are useless. Friends, have a great start to your week, and we'll be back next time to speak to you again.
lot of products say they're clean, but what does that really mean? At Ritual, we have very high standards for what clean really means. Like for our best-selling Essential Prenatal Multivitamin, which is heavy metal tested, clean label project certified, and GMO-free. It features key mom-to-baby ingredients, like folate for neural tube support, choline for baby's brain development, and omega-3 for brain and vision support. But our high standards don't stop there. All of the ingredients in our Essential Prenatal Multivitamin are sourced through our Made Traceable supply chain, so it's clear where they come from and why they're there. Because clean isn't clean enough, especially during pregnancy. Shop Ritual for the support you deserve with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.